is A Disaster, a podcast about disasters and the music they make us listen to. I'm Peter, and I'm here with my co-host, Lee.
Hey, I'm Lee. I'm here with my co-host, Peter.
And you're joining us for another disaster. It's in the title.
That's right. You came here for a disaster, and we're not going to disappoint.
No, not at all.
Nope.
I don't know what today's is about, as I have not known what the other ones are about either, because in this season, Lee's the one telling me about disasters. Before we get into it, if you want to... What do I normally say? It's kind of cool. I'm going to ad-lib.
Please help us.
I don't even remember. Yeah. I'm just going to ad-lib. Just make some convo. Like, for example, I would say that if you want to get caught up, I would start at the beginning.
That's what you usually say.
That is what I usually say. And that's what I said to all my coworkers at a recent work retreat when they asked, what's something that we don't know about you? And I said, I have a podcast about disasters.
So glad you asked. Sit down.
So that's resulted in a couple fans and one super fan who might even, like, basically now every day at work is one of the partners at the firm that I work. He, like, every day is like, oh, I listened to the one about the tsunami. And today he was like, I had no idea that in 2011 when the tsunami hit Japan, it moved the whole island 2.4 meters. And I was like, we recorded that a while ago. I forgot about that.
Even you forgot about God. Yeah. Someone did that to me the next day. I was like, oh, did it? Cool. I didn't know that.
There's so many like tidbits in there. It's kind of like, I find a lot of our episodes are a little bit like, I've got a lot of trivia in there, but for the most part, whenever it's time for me to build a new gaming PC, I like learn everything there is to know about computers. And I have it all in my mind for the space of like 3 days until I put it all in my cart and order it. And then I immediately forget everything.
You delete those files.
What kind of video card do you have? I don't fucking know, man.
It's the one I got.
The good one.
It's in there.
I trust myself that 3 days ago I knew what I was doing.
Me of the present knows me of the past. Did his homework.
That's practice direction for lawyers. Like if you have standard procedures, then when somebody asks you, you can be confident that like... I know that I normally do it this way, so this is the way that I did it.
This is the way I did it because it's the right way. Oh.
Now that I've got that out of the way, if you've just skipped over that, but you took one thing from that, it's that start at the beginning and listen to everything to get caught up. We don't do like inside jokes, but we'll reference things that we've talked about before, and that might come up again today.
It might.
If you want to keep up with us on social media, at This Disaster Pod, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, although Twitter right now is a little bit of a dumpster fire, so maybe I'll stop advertising that one.
I mean, it still works. Just it's all on whether you want to use it or not, I guess.
Did you hear recently, I guess Trent Reznor deleted his Twitter account?
Oh, didn't hear that. No.
And Elon Musk called him a crybaby. And my first reaction was, yeah. Have you heard his discography?
That's like calling like Zach De La Roca, you know, a hothead or something.
First reaction. Then second reaction is actually a thread on Reddit. And the top comment was, head like a hole, black as your soul. I'd rather die than give you control. It's like he wrote a song about it. So you're surprised that he deleted his Twitter?
Yeah, that's 1989. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. He kind of staked his claim. Stuke his clams.
He staked his clams.
Yep.
And baked those clams. Steamed clams.
What was I talking about? Our social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, patreon.com/thisdisasterpod if you want to get some micro disasters.
We love our patrons.
We do indeed.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all I have to say. So now I'm just going to shut my mouth. Well, no, I'll contribute.
Yeah, but
I'll stop talking for now.
Okay.
And let you tell me something terrible.
It is.
Oh, good.
A little.
That's why I'm here.
I don't think there'll be as many laughs in this one.
Well, challenge accepted.
I know you'll find a way.
We've laughed about some terrible things.
That's true. Who am I? It's been a while.
People,
I forgot
cows.
Who we're talking about. Yeah, cows, people, hippies. Well, this is a topic that was suggested by a fan of the show.
Ooh.
And said fan suggested the topic to my brother, Joe.
Oh.
Who's a friend of the show, and he suggested it to me.
Oh.
And added bonus for you and I is that this is much like the when we discussed the Heron Road Bridge collapse in episode 24.5. This is another local disaster.
Ooh.
Mm. If you consider the Ottawa Valley local.
I do.
I do.
I live in it.
Yeah. Yeah. We all do.
There's a few people that live in it.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
So, is it like a million? I don't know what the population is now.
It's big.
Cool.
But I'm talking like the outskirts, sort of like, you know.
Oh, the
Carlton
newly,
Place and further out, you know, the Ottawa.
The newly annexed territories.
Yes, yes. Yes, today, Peter, I would like to relate to you and to our listeners the details of the Almont train wreck of 1942.
Ooh.
Which I'd never heard of before my brother brought it up to me. So,
right in the middle of my second favorite war.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And very relevant to that, as you'll see. Your first being the
Gallic.
The Great War.
The what? No, World War One. No.
The Great War.
I was making a joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. By the way, did you watch All Quiet on the Western Front? It's on Netflix.
No.
There's a feel-good movie.
No, it's not.
You know the story?
Is it about the Christmas of... No, that's...
Quiet. It's World War One.
Yeah.
And it's a story told from the German perspective towards the end of the First World War.
Okay.
Basically your standard feel-good, pick-me-up movie.
Feel like you're being facetious.
Doesn't end super well, is what I'm saying.
No, it doesn't.
So, but it's one of those important movies that I'm glad they made.
Of course,
it's like
I'm just trying to think.
it's like Band of Brothers. You know, like I first of all, it's great, but also I'm happy it exists because at some point my son's going to be like, "What was World War II?" And I can be like, "Sit down." So now, like, what was World War I?
Well,
let me
sit down.
Yeah,
yeah. Wasn't the German sort of. When they surrendered,
yep,
it was like we surrender.
Mm-hmm.
You don't
wink.
You don't. No. We totally surrender.
Yeah.
You don't sound like you're gonna for now.
Yeah,
for now.
We're totally not gonna build any submarines. Oh, these are water tractors.
Yeah.
Water tractors.
Just enjoy your depression. Yep. Whatever you know. Anyway, already way off. So,
this is welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Almont train wreck. So, Almont is located about 46 kilometers or 30 minutes southwest of Ottawa proper, residing in the Lanark County region of the Ottawa Valley.
Mm.
So, the Ottawa Valley is sort of the outskirts, like I said, like Carlton Place and all that sort of, you know, rural. Mm-hmm. Surroundings. It is also of particular significance to me, as that's where my dad grew up before moving to Ottawa as a young adult, where he met my mom and eventually settling in Kanata, which is where I grew up. A few of his brothers raised their families in Almont, one of whom is still a resident, so I have many fond childhood memories of barbecues with my extended family and playing with my cousins and all that good stuff. Almont will always have a special place in my heart, so I'm extra interested in the subject matter herein.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'll try to be respectful.
You don't have to do that. It's okay.
Okay. I wasn't going
We're both. No, we're both bulletproof. We know that. Mm-hmm. So, Almont, December 27th, 1942.
Ooh, it's a Christmassy one.
It's a Christmas time, and it's wartime.
Christmas and wartime.
Christmas and wartime,
it's the best of time. It was the worst of times. Somebody should write a book about that.
It's a good line.
Yeah.
It should be the first line.
I don't know about that.
No.
You don't want to blow it all in the first line.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it's not that good of a line. You know, we can picture it, right?
Yes.
Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
No, we can't. The Ottawa Valley Local was the name of a train that traveled through the small towns of Pembroke, Renfrew, Arnprior, Pakenham, and Almont.
I know all of those.
You've heard of all those.
I love this disaster.
Oh, so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in the area, like Peter and I do, you're familiar with all these places, like you just said.
Like I just said.
That line is redundant.
I'm so glad you said that. It's unscripted is what I like about it.
I like that we're just talking.
Yeah.
Off the cuff.
Nobody's reading any notes. Just.
On this particular day, December 27th, the line known as the Canadian Pacific Railway train number 550, or the Sunday evening special to the locals, was being helmed by a 34-year-old locomotive known amongst the engineers as the Cantankerous Old Hog.
Okay, so the locomotive was 34 years old.
It sounds like I was talking about a person.
Definitely. I was like, did you just call the engineer locomotive? because I don't think people can.
Tough.
Yeah. Okay.
He was a cantankerous old hog. No, that was the name of the steam engine the guy at the front. Yeah. The hog in question was having more than its fair share of trouble pulling the extra load of 5 wood coaches, which were added that day, along with the usual 10 passenger cars, all through the December sleet and freezing rain.
Not a good recipe.
It's not a good start.
No.
The inclement weather, the fact that the hog was pulling 3 times as many cars as usual, and the fact that there was a leak in the boiler. No problem.
Leaky boiler. That's how they get you.
That they made maintaining pressure difficult. All these things resulted in the train becoming more and more delayed after it had departed from Petawawa earlier that evening.
I know that one, too.
You've heard of that, too.
Buddy Leroy's in Petawawa.
That's right.
Yeah.
A lot of military.
Yep.
It's a military town.
It is.
Mm-hmm. So, under usual circumstances, wouldn't have amounted to much more than a late train.
Mm-hmm.
However.
Uh-oh.
Passenger extra 2802 East, which had started its own journey out of Red Deer, Alberta on Christmas Eve, followed closely behind.
2 days.
2 days before.
Alberta to Ottawa.
Okay. It's moving.
Cool.
Yeah. It's not pokey.
No.
Yeah. So this was a troop train.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it was transporting soldiers to Halifax, Nova Scotia. In 1942, exactly, where they would then be shipped overseas to fight in the battle,
the war.
World War II.
The second one.
The second one, which was in its third year by then.
Yep.
Going strong.
Mm-hmm.
The troop train contained 13 metal coaches along with the usual engine and caboose.
Mm.
And this is all completely unbeknownst to the crew of the Ottawa Valley Local. Reason being that due to the war effort, these transports were kept secret from everyone.
Okay. I guess saboteurs. Is that what they're afraid of?
I guess so.
Okay.
Just erring on the side of caution, bordering on paranoia.
Not a lot of shelling going on in Canada.
Not so much.
No. Okay. Fair enough. Saboteurs. Yeah.
The troop train was being helmed by engineer Bill Richardson. That's a person.
Okay. Was he a cantankerous old hog?
We assume so,
okay,
yes. Cool. Yeah. And conductor John Howard.
Mm-hmm.
They were ordered to run a speedy train in order to get the men where they needed to be ASAP.
Fair enough.
While also being expected to follow a safe distance behind the local, roughly 20 minutes or so.
Okay, but the local's going real slow.
Local's going real slow.
It's got about 3 times as many carriages as it normally has.
For one, yeah. A lot of factors are keeping it from running on
time. All right.
It's a big ask.
Was the Halifax explosion World War I or World War II?
Pretty sure that was World War I.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know what?
Because they were using the...
I'm going to bring that up later.
Oh, okay.
You're going to love it.
All right. I can't wait to get just blown away, just like the harbor did in the Halifax explosion episode.
I'll cut it in with an obvious, like,
two-thirds apart.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to hear about that one, check out episode
16
about the Halifax explosion.
I love that. I love how you have those episodes just at the ready.
Top of my head.
It's impressive. Despite the inclement weather, it was making excellent time, which I'm talking about the troop train,
right?
Which worked out well for the first part of their orders, that being run a speedy train.
Yep.
As for the second part, follow roughly behind the local. Mm. Much easier said than done, considering all the things we just said.
Yeah.
I'm not going to read that part of my notes either.
What notes?
No. Also, because the troop train had no speed gauge.
That seems like an oversight.
Yeah. I don't know if that was customary or just it fell off and they shrugged, but...
Do you need one?
Do you?
I guess you kind of
You're do. Not on the highway.
No.
Just go fast.
There's other trains, though,
fast
I
as
guess.
You want.
Yeah.
There's no cop pulling you over.
Yeah, fair enough.
But no real way to determine just how far away from the local they were at any given time.
Right, because they don't have, like, GPS or even... Can they communicate with the other trains?
They didn't have shit.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
They had... We'll see.
Okay.
They were things.
Lights and screaming.
Stop peeking at my notes.
Oh, God. Okay.
In an effort to play things safe, Richardson made the decision to wait for 15 minutes at Renfrew Station and another 15 minutes at Arnprior Station.
Bet that hog was real cantankerous. The whole time there, he's just like...
Exactly.
Passenger drunk.
Exactly.
Yep.
Upon arriving at Pakenham Station, Richardson and Howard observed a green light.
Lights. Hey.
Which would indicate that there was a safe distance between the two trains.
Okay.
And so they continued on towards Elmont without stopping. Unfortunately, the green light in question had been set ahead of time as Pakenham Station was unmanned this particular evening. Yes, leave it on.
But if it's unmanned, wouldn't you leave the red one on?
I would leave the red one on.
Yeah.
And maybe a little note.
Yeah.
The station has the flu. You get that? The whole store caught the flu. That's from my cousin Vinny.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
You like that?
That's why you always leave a note.
That's why you always leave a note. There we go.
I got it in.
We got it in. So, no, leave the green light.
No, stupid.
Because I'm sure all will be fine.
Yeah.
Had there been someone there, the light would have been set to red and the troop train would have made it stop.
Mm-hmm.
Or had there been no one there and they set the light to red, the train would still made it stop.
Mm-hmm.
Until they figured out there was no one there. I'm going to go, God damn it. And then, but still, they would have made it stop.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the local, now very overloaded with passengers and still dealing with that leak in the boiler, was having a very hard time maintaining its speed. So much so that it was...
going backwards.
Going, oh, no.
Why is this whole thing uphill?
It's the valley. Yeah, there's the valley. As it was pulling out of a flag stop in Blakeney...
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard of that.
No. Can't all be winners.
There had to be one, yeah.
Although, Evan, do you ever talk to somebody who, like, is familiar with all the small towns, and they'll talk about, like, oh, yeah, that's over by... Like, recently I learned about Madoc.
Yeah.
What? Murloc? Like the mythical creature?
Chesterville?
From World of Warcraft?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know what you know. You're making this up.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed the town of five houses.
Yeah. I blinked.
Yeah.
Nod
to any fan in a town with five houses.
Yeah. We love you.
Yeah.
Please keep listening. Yes, I was pulling out a flag stop in Blakeney, which we all know and love.
Yep.
Was unable to climb the slight incline that it faced and had to back up to a level stretch of track to take a run at it.
Oh, boy.
You're right. It did go back. Oh,
God. It's sleet, too. Let's not forget.
That's fucked.
Yeah.
Like a train having to, like, okay, back her up. Jesus. Shovel more coal in there.
It's not. You boys shovel coal?
I don't know that one.
That's also Arrested Development.
Isn't he boy Shell Cole?
Yeah, in the last episode, they had to, like, get the thing, the boat moving.
Oh,
and Lucille, yeah.
That's right. Oh, the strippers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that now. Now, 40 minutes behind schedule, the local arrived at Elmont Station at 8:32 p.m., ready to take on the awaiting passengers. This would normally take just a few minutes, but due to the Christmas rush...
Mm-hmm.
This particular stop boasted some 200 passengers.
And presents.
And presents. A lot of sleighs and rocking horses.
Yeah. No, it's World War II, so.
Yeah.
Probably some lumps of coal.
True.
Yeah.
A lot of bad kids.
Yeah.
Not a lot of cheer. 200 seems like a crazy amount for a rural town in 1942.
Yeah, were there 200 people?
I don't know what the average would have been in a normal day.
Well, we've established five houses. So
there's
10 people?
10 people. Yeah. 200 seems like a big jump.
Yep.
And all the luggage and the presents.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said.
Yep.
And the sleighs.
Yep.
And the rocking horse.
Mm-hmm.
Slingshots and
guns. You would get that for Christmas back then.
Oh, yeah. BB gun.
Yeah.
Shoot your eye out.
Yeah.
Classic.
Don't point at your face. Or do. Whatever.
Whatever.
You got five brothers.
I'm going to go in there and drink. Yes.
Different time.
Exactly. Meanwhile, The Alberta troop train was speeding along the track, determined to make it on time.
Mm-hmm. When
lost it at the end of that.
Military meets civilian.
in the worst way. Mm-hmm. Just moments after the conductor gave the first whistle for the local to proceed, the troop train came rounding the curve in the track to approach Elmont Station.
Oh, boy.
This long curve would prove to be somewhat of a blessing as it resulted in the engine power being shut off and the speed slowing from 70 kilometers an hour to 40.
Mm-hmm. Still fast for a train.
Which is fast for a train, not for a car. When you're doing 40 in your car for our American and non-Canadian friends, it's you're poking along.
It's like slightly above idling.
Yeah, pretty much. you're in a residential, like, you know. Wishing you could speed up. Mm. But for a gigantic train, that would, you know.
For cantankerous old hog, you don't want that going 40.
You don't. You don't want to meet that guy. Blessing, but also a curse as it prevented anyone on board the troop train from seeing what was in front of them until it was far too late.
The curve.
The curve.
Yeah.
They couldn't.
Raining, you know. The sleet.
So
icy
many
tracks.
Factors.
Sibley.
Jeez.
That's why we banned sleet in Canada.
Yeah.
Following this disaster.
We're not doing that anymore.
No, not allowed.
We had our fun, but enough's enough. No sleet. and you can listen to our climate change episodes to figure out why.
Yeah, if you want to check those out, those are episodes
35 and 36.
Right? That's right.
Those are good ones.
Oh, with, how do you do it?
Nuclear norm.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Teehee. Also preventing them from seeing what was in front of them was the fact that no railway flares were used to illuminate the rear cars of the local, which should have been common practice when the rear cars of the train extended beyond the limits of the station, in this case, 50 meters beyond.
That's a lot of meters.
Okay. Cutting corners. See what it gets you.
Yep.
Instead, whoever was in charge of this thought the rear brake lights of the end car and a trainman's red lamp would suffice.
No, though.
I'm gonna spoil it for you. It didn't suffice.
Mm.
And finally, Sam Thompson, one of the firemen aboard the troop train, because if you didn't know that, and I didn't know that, there's firemen aboard.
Well, I guess that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
You got fire.
I never would have guessed.
You need a fireman.
You got, men shoveling coal into an open furnace. Have a fireman around.
Think we should have somebody who knows how to control fire?
Ah! We're not setting fire to the train, you dummy. Just this one part to make it go.
Extremely hot.
He observed that the train order signal above the station was green, indicating that it was all clear.
Again.
And I guess it was.
Why? Okay.
I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe he doesn't know what green is.
Colorblind.
Yeah, colorblind.
That's what it is.
Fireman.
Yeah.
That black and white fire.
Well, I guess it doesn't need to be color, not blind.
No.
Just that's fire.
That's fire. I can feel it.
I can't tell
what color it is, but I know what hot. And that hot. Wow.
Thank you for your service.
The fireman's weird.
We don't think fall firemen are dumb.
No, we don't. We certainly don't. A 5-year-old Bernie Turcott was seated in the
Bernie?
Rear.
Bernie?
1942. Yeah, boy.
Yep.
Bernie Turcott.
Bernie short for Bernard?
It can be.
Cool.
Or Bernard, if you're...
Yeah.
Sophisticated.
Fair enough. Cool. 1942.
Different name. Yeah, you don't hear, you don't meet too many Bernies.
No, you sure don't?
You don't. Weekend of Bernies. That's a funny movie.
That's a good one, yeah.
Dead guy being paraded around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good premise. Mm-hmm. He was seated in the rear car of the local with his mother, father, and baby sister.
Oh, no.
As the train was taking on passengers, he asked his mother, Cecile, 42, if he could step outside onto the rear platform for a minute. Yes, she said, as long as he was careful.
Uh-oh.
He returned quickly, reporting that it was too cold, one, and also that there was a large white light approaching from behind. That's insane.
Just, first of all, order of information.
Only a child. It's too cold, mommy. Okay. And there's a thing like, there's a what?
Yeah.
sweetie, lead with that. Let's next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's run. Are you feeling strong? It's from Elf.
Elf?
Elf.
Oh.
Elf.
That's a show.
That was a good show.
Yeah. Elf is great, too.
Elf is good. Mm-hmm. At the last moment, engineer Lauren Richardson saw the reflection of his own headlight in the glass of the local's rear car door, probably looking very much like the eye of Satan in that moment. Looking back at you. Yeah. Hello.
Shit.
It's me. He applied the emergency brake, but it was too late. Mm-hmm. Passenger extra 2802 East smashed into the rear cars of the local, causing a hailstorm of metal and wooden shrapnel to go flying through the air.
Oh boy.
The last two cars and much of the third were completely destroyed.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
What happened to Bernard?
Oh, well
I guess we know his story.
We'll get to him.
Okay.
He lived to tell.
There we go.
I'll say that.
All right. Fair enough.
The impact caused the local to become violently uncoupled in the middle. Mm-hmm. With the front half of the passenger coaches being shot nearly 50 meters down the track.
Oh, my God.
I can't remember.
40 kilometers an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's such a nothing. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a speeding metal bullet or, the size of a train.
That's inertia, right? I think that's inertia
right there.
Yeah. Right, nuclear norm?
Yep.
Thanks, Nuclear Norm.
Ed Muldoon, 15 years old at the time, recalls believing at first that a bomb had gone off and being instantly buried under debris. William Parsons, a gunner aboard the troop train, remembers that once the trains had stopped moving and the wreckage was still, that there was at first a strange calm with no sound, just huge snowflakes quietly falling to the ground.
Jesus. Fun fact, he would later go on to Father Graham Parsons.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Who we learned all about.
In episode
27 and a half.
About Graham Parsons.
About Graham Parsons. That one out. And that's probably not true.
No, it's definitely not true. Stupid. Just making that up.
But it did give us a chance to reference the past episode. Yes. Eerie, quiet, calm. Mm-hmm.
I can picture it.
Short-lived, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Now, these days, when you picture an airport or a train station, you probably aren't imagining too many people living close by. I'm not.
No.
Like, it's usually far out of town.
In my mind, this has been in the middle of a field somewhere.
Right. That's what I pictured. Probably because of shit like this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Don't build it near the houses.
Nope.
You want to keep these usually a safe distance from these potentially deadly structures. Mm-hmm. This being a small town in 1942, the train station was more or less the epicenter of the community.
Of course.
So, when shit hit the fan, the town responded very quickly because it was basically happening next door.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a silver lining.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's an upside. Yeah. They were fashioning splints out of broken orange crates and even removing doors from houses to be used as stretchers.
Nice.
So there you go. 12-year-old.
Just picture them removing the door from like a big fat warehouse that says stretcher storage because it's World War II. Exactly. So it's like a stretcher factory, and they're like, "We got the door." They just don't notice that it's full of stretchers.
I thought you were just gonna say some guy's like, "The hell are you doing? It's cold. I still need a door." 12-year-old Lolly Edwards.
1942.
That's 1940 nothing.
Lolly?
That's weird in any... Yeah, Lolly.
Short for...
Lollipop.
You know what? They have weird abbreviations. Like, I've never understood the connection between Richard and Dick. So I bet you Lolly's short from, like, Dick. Edward.
Yeah. Or even Lawrence.
Yeah.
Well, no, that it's one. Probably...
Yeah, that would make sense.
Well, my other favorite is... Oh, yeah. You can call me Margaret, or for short, Peggy.
Nope. I'm not going to because there's no connection
there. There's no letters.
No. Margaret.
There's an E. That doesn't count.
Yeah.
Or no, is a G.
He's barely a letter.
No. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
No. Sorry to every Peggy.
Sorry.
No, you know what? No, fuck you.
Fuck you, Peggy. Pick a name.
You can't hog them all.
Yeah. My name's Leach, short for Stuart. What? I decided. Lolly Edwards, 12 years old. He was headed home that evening and decided to take a shortcut through the train yards. Pausing for a moment to see the passenger train off, he was understandably terrified at the ear-splitting sound of screeching metal, followed by the sight of what appeared to be one train plowing into the back of another.
I get that.
Which is what it was. Yep. Yeah, that is terrifying. Good observation, Lolly. He ran home to tell his mother, who didn't believe him at first, until she heard the sounds of sirens and church bells.
Right. Yeah.
I told you, Mom. They're not British.
Why is he
British?
Why is he an old British miner?
Lolly was sent back to the train station to search for his older brother, who was on board the local headed for Ottawa.
Oh, boy.
So, fortunately, he found his brother almost immediately. Mm-hmm. He was in the care of several soldiers from the troop train. The soldiers in question were squaring off with the owner of the O'Brien Theater, mm-hmm. who apparently had some issues with the wounded being allowed inside his place of business.
Uh-huh.
This was quickly rectified once the soldiers removed the doors of the O'Brien, and it, along with the town hall, became temporary hospital and morgue sites once the 20 beds at Elmont's Rosemont Hospital were quickly filled.
Mayor's like, can we please stop taking doors off? We have enough stretchers. We have enough doors. I see you. I see you. Put it back.
We're taking this door. Orders, sir. I have my orders.
We don't need it.
But I like the O'Brien guy. Yeah. You're not coming in here. Yeah. Oh, let's take the door. That way we can just walk in.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's keeping us from going in? Okay. The door. Get the door, guys. Yes. William Parsons, mm-hmm. father of Graham.
Graham Parsons.
Yep. Ended up at one point aiding with a makeshift morgue, which had been set up in the basement of the town hall. Mm. He recalls bodies being laid out in rows, twisted, mangled, and blackened.
You boy.
Yeesh. Private F.R. Witta mm-hmm. and Sergeant J.W. Gillespie mm-hmm. were both awarded the British Empire Medal and Lieutenant Nursing Sister Anne Thorpe the Royal Red Cross.
Oh.
Second class.
Look at that.
For their actions that night in aiding doctors in surgery for hours in the falling snow.
Thanks, guys.
Just outside, makeshift.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Good for them.
That's wartime. It was just...
Convenient that they had just spent a lot of time training for exactly this.
It's kind of the people you want around. Much like the Def Leppard episode when nurses and cops just started crawling out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
A hospital train for Ottawa was organized. Mm-hmm. One of the passengers being 15-year-old Ed Muldoon. Mm-hmm. He was the guy who was buried in debris. Think I mentioned.
Right.
He recalls two Canadian Pacific Railway reps mm-hmm. boarding the train and insisting he and anyone else who happened to be conscious sign a form.
Uh-huh.
It's fine.
This isn't legal advice, but don't sign forms that are handed to you in the
in the wake of the disaster. Rubble.
Yeah. Next to the rubble of the train you just survived.
Yes. in the event of the ongoing disaster.
Or even if anyone just hands you a form and says, "Here, sign this." Don't read it.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
That's good advice for free.
Yeah.
That's we won't even call that an hour or anything.
No. Well, we will.
We will. We'll bill you. Yeah. It turned out to be a waiver.
Yeah, huh?
Surprise.
Yeah.
Exonerating CPR of any liability in the event.
So, wait a second.
Did they have these in their back pocket?
Right? They had these ready?
Was it written on a napkin?
In the likely event.
Get the forms.
Yeah.
Yep. You know where they are. Get the forms. Yeah, nice. The train arrived at Union Station in Ottawa at 5:30 a.m., carrying 84 stretchers and 20 walking wounded. I like that term.
Walking wounded.
Yeah, it's
that's pretty cool.
It's cool.
We should name a song that.
Yeah, we should. Walking wounded.
Walking wounded.
31 ambulances were waiting to take everyone to the everyone to hospital. Mm-hmm. That's how you say it.
Is it?
I don't like it.
No.
But, you know, I get it.
Hey, say the plural of beer.
You just did.
Oh, no.
Oh, you thought you were going to get me? Beers.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. You don't say like
I had 2-4 beer.
Do you? Because I know some people that are like, oh, yeah, I had like 3 beer.
I don't. I'm a snake. I drank 3 beers. No, I would say beers.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I drank 3 beer.
Yeah.
Why?
No.
Is that word exempt?
It's just like.
But I would say I saw 3 deer as I drank 3 beers.
No,
English.
I would say 3 deers. I think I saw 3 deer. You know, you're right. I would say 3 deer.
English is the stupidest, most inconsistent.
Can't be consistent about this one. But I'm with you to hospital.
Yeah, hospital. I get it. Like people are like, well, you wouldn't say you would go to the school. You would say I went to school and then I went to hospital.
Oh.
You sound weird and like wish you were British.
But school is almost like, I always thought about school as almost being like a verb. I went to school, which is the experience of being in school, being taught things. Instead, like I went to the hospital.
I went to hospital.
Yeah.
Like I feel like you should be Tiny Tim.
Am I going to go to hospital today?
No.
This is the worst of times. We don't have hospitals.
We don't have that. No, you won't, Tim. You'll die at home. Jury's out on that. I don't know. Chime in the Discord.
Yep.
Hospital or the hospital? Where was I? Hospital. Yeah, 31 ambulances waiting to take everyone to the hospital, one of which had been robbed of its fuel by a thief.
Of course.
Just after Christmas.
What the fuck?
Hey, man. Times are tough.
Uh-huh.
5-year-old Bernie Turcotte,
mm-hmm.
there he is,
yeah, Bernie.
Was among the flood of patients who ended up at the Civic Hospital.
Oh, good.
Where I work.
Hey.
Hey.
Were you there this time?
No, I was minus several decades
old. Oh, okay.
He, along with his mother and father...
Oh, thank God.
Suffered fractures to their legs, with Bernie sustaining a fracture to his arm as well.
Mm. Baby sister okay?
No. 6-month-old daughter, Denise, did not survive.
Oh.
That's sad.
Bummer.
Ugh. And given their immobility, Bernie and his parents, it would be almost a month until they were reunited.
Mm.
That's tough.
That is rough.
Yeah. And then your little baby dies.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That sucks.
Terrifying. Mary Coderre was a nurse from Kingston who had returned home with her sister to be with their father for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
An entry from her diary describes the role she played in helping to care for the wounded. And I quote,
mm-hmm.
I first became aware of the disaster when my brother Larry burst into our house only a few dozen feet from the tracks. Mm-hmm. Again, yeah. Right there.
Good, convenient.
Yeah. Half carrying a soldier with a badly broken leg.
Hmm.
His bone was protruding from his skin and he was bleeding profusely.
No.
Oh, God.
Bones are on the inside.
Bones go on the inside and they're not split.
Ew.
Margaret and I, with Larry's help, broke up an orange crate to create splints and tore up.
How many fucking orange crates are around?
What?
I guess. Okay.
So I guess.
Isn't this during the war?
Yeah,
I guess they're empty.
Rationing.
Yeah, they don't need the orange crates because there's no oranges. So
there's no oranges. They just had the crates to remember the oranges they once ate before Hitler fucked the world up briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Crate splints. Tore up a sheet to make bandages. Once we were able to control the bleeding, we carried him across the street to the town hall where a temporary treatment center and morgue had been set up. Like I said,
mm-hmm.
as the Rosamond Hospital was quickly overwhelmed. We worked there all night.
Mm.
And another of her entries reads, I had nursed sick people for years, but never have I seen the horrors like I did that night. In the morning, we reported to the Rosamond Hospital to help their tired doctors and nurses. The next few days are a blur, but I do remember tending a woman who I think had broken every bone in her body. She died in my arms.
Impossible. But jeez. That's rough.
Yeah.
I regret saying that first thing because that came to mind before you finished your sentence. And then the sentence ended with her dying.
I mean, probably not every bone.
No. It's like,
I mean, the tiny little ones in your ear.
That, come on.
Come on. Those
probably didn't break those. Fuck.
There's always one guy.
Yeah, huh?
That's not possible.
I didn't think I'd be that guy. But I guess in this situation, I am.
I count on it.
Here we are.
That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm. I should have let you finish.
It's okay. She can't hear you. Or maybe she can.
And I'm totally redeemed.
And totally redeem yourself. The death toll of this event turned out to be a total of 39, 33 immediately, three more later that night, and another three in the weeks following, with between 150 and 200 injuries reported, proving to be one of the worst train-related accidents in the country.
Jeez.
Yikes. On January 7th, 11 days after the accident, a coroner's inquest was opened at Almont's town hall. Leading up to the inquest, Delmar Howard, son of troop train conductor John Howard, reported that upon arriving from Detroit to visit his parents in Smith Falls, had discovered his father missing. A note was discovered, written by John Howard, which read in part, "I am sorry I have to do this, but I do not want to go to jail. I was not responsible for that accident. I hope you will forgive me for doing this, but I can't help it. God is my judge. I made no mistakes and broke no rules, but I can't stand it if they accuse me of 36 deaths.
Oh boy.
On January 6th at 3:30 a.m., John Howard's body was discovered in the Rideau River just below the rapids beneath Smith Falls Perrin Plow Bridge. Not,
I get it,
a,
I guess,
super surprising
no
result.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's got to be.
Yeah.
The weight.
Yeah.
The weight of that. Yeesh.
Well, right. Well, like what he said, he didn't do anything wrong. He read the signs, right? It was green.
Pretty much everything was wrong.
Yeah.
He was right.
Yeah.
But they're not. Yeah. I mean, who knows?
The lights were green.
Well, actually, the results of the inquiry found the CPR to be at fault.
I don't say.
So.
The old waiver sign in CPR, huh?
The old waivers.
Nice.
Waiver in the face of the wounded. To be at fault rather than the individual trainman. So.
There you go. Obviously.
It was noted that they were given confusing and potentially impossible orders to follow. I maintain a good speed whilst keeping a safe distance from the local train. I don't know where it was. However, a later investigation conducted by the Board of Transport Commissioners reached a different conclusion, citing failures by the crews of both trains, the lack of track flares, and a red lamp probably got mentioned, though it's unclear how effective these would have been in allowing for a speeding train to stop in time. Maurice Turcotte, Bernie's father, successfully sued for $40,000, which would be roughly $600,000 by today's standards. Their daughter, Denise, was buried at Notre Dame Cemetery on Montreal Road here in Ottawa. Due to their injuries, none of the Turcotts were able to attend the funeral. Regarding the soldiers and local townspeople's response to the horrific events, Bernie Turcotte remarked that the real lesson was that people can really be damn decent when they have to.
It's true. But only if they have to.
Only if they really have to. Okay, I'll be decent. Because I have to. Ed Muldoon, the 15-year-old waiver signer, sustained only superficial physical injuries from the accident, but ended up suffering from nightmares at least once a week for the 75 years that followed.
I would get that, too.
Quote, "I can see everything. I can hear all the sounds, the tearing and breaking, the screams of people crying. There was a baby thrown out of the train and under a bush by the tracks, but it was still alive. I can hear that, too."
Jesus Christ.
You don't forget that.
No, that'll stick with you.
Not easily.
You
know? For years, he would return every summer to the scene of the accident, either standing alone where the tracks were, or sometimes walking the long curve. One final survivor of note, particularly to us on the podcast, is Doug Snare.
DS,
who, along with his girlfriend, Thyra Shore,
1942.
Big time.
Sorry, Thyra?
T-H-Y-R-A. Thyra? Tara. Tira.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. She's probably not alive. Just because of time.
Yeah.
You know, walked away from the accident unscathed.
Whoa.
The four people sitting across from Doug and Thyra on the third last coach were killed.
The more you say it, the more I picture it in my head, the more I think it can't be Thyra.
Can't be Thyra. I'll say Tira. That's.
Could it be Tyra?
Tyra. Let's say Tyra. Tyra. Okay. Tyra Banks.
Tyra Banks.
That works.
Sure.
Yeah. Their coachmates are killed, yet all Doug and Tyra suffered was Doug's broken watch.
Oh, wow.
Oh, champagne problems. So cocky were they that they returned to Renfrew the same New Year's Eve on the same Sunday evening special train, and fate, perhaps wanting to knock Mr. Snare down just a peg, saw their train held up in Stittsville by a heavy rain snowstorm, with the passengers aboard being forced to spend the night on the train. And why do I call attention to Doug Snare in particular? Not just because he broke his watch.
Right.
It turns out 25 years earlier, when he was just 1.5 years old, Doug survived yet another of Canada's deadliest disasters, the Halifax explosion.
Nice.
Thank you. Good night.
Tied together.
That's the end.
I love it. Nice.
It.
Don't travel with that guy.
No.
Because disaster follows him around. Or do, I guess. Yeah. Well, that's right. Yeah, he's lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, just, watch. So
that's true.
That's a disaster.
He did break his watch.
Holy shit. So that was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And yet we still found so much to laugh about.
A lot more. more than I expected us to. But
yeah.
Then
should we look inward? Nah.
No, I think it's...
No, we good.
We're good. We're good. I mean, we're providing entertainment.
It's true. It's true.
Light entertainment.
Jesus, that's a good one. I bet you our buddy Craig's going to like that one.
I would hope so.
/ I bet he knows about it.
I bet he knows more about it than we do. And was sort of listening going, no, that's wrong. No, didn't happen like that.
Wow, that was a disaster. Do you have some music for that?
So the song I picked is...
When'd you pick it? Like a week ago?
The song I picked, time isn't important when I did. It's like when you buy Christmas presents at the last minute. Like, why is it a crime to buy it at the last second?
I don't think it is.
I bought it 10 minutes ago. I bought it a month ago. I gave it to you.
Yeah.
Same time I was still always going to give it to you.
Still thought about you. Still do you like it? Do you like it? Do you like it? You do?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
When'd you buy it? Irrelevant.
Yeah. Why don't you...
you know I would have come to the same conclusion in right. finding this. I would have gone like
that's right.
a month ago and gone, 1942 Christmas songs, please, yeah. in no, Google.
Exactly.
And gotten the same result and been like, good enough.
Yeah.
You know I might have, for all I know, I might have done that and forgot.
You know what? You know what? No room in my ass for you. So I'm going to need you to climb all the way out and just accept the gift that you're given.
Yeah, exactly. You can accept the gift or you can live up my ass. You can't have both.
What if you choose the ass?
I don't want that. Are you sure? That's a nice house coat. Isn't that in Breaking Bad? He's like, Skylar, can you get out of my ass?
Yeah. I would really appreciate it if you would get out of my ass.
That's a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
The song I chose and the time and when I chose it is irrelevant. It's White Christmas by Bing Crosby. And it came out in 1942.
Oh, wow.
So probably... you were hearing it at some point during this horrific period. So either it helped or it's just forever associated with a nightmare.
Living
and
in asses.
You hear even living in asses, and when you hear it, you throw up.
Yeah.
So enjoy.
For me, I'm going with the song In the Mood by Glenn Miller. Are you familiar with that one?
Is that the one that goes like... No, I think it goes like did it? No?
I don't think so.
Oh shit.
I'll play for you.
Okay.
And you're hearing it now.
You're hearing it.
But part of the reason is that it came out in 1944, which I knew off the top of my head and I have to look it up right now. And the other reason is it's actually like, I'm pretty sure when I think back, it's probably my earliest musical memory.
Mm.
My dad playing this probably off a record or maybe a cassette. Yeah. We used to live on a farm until I was about 3 years old.
Oh.
And like
out in the Ottawa Valley.
Yeah, in Russell.
There you go.
Yeah.
Opposite end.
Yeah.
East end. That's not right. The west end.
Yeah, but yeah. Yes. Still really, it's really nice.
Russell's nice.
Oh, Russell's gone a long way.
It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I actually have a memory of him putting on that song In the Mood by Glenn Miller on his like hi-fi.
Yeah.
Because I was born in the 40s. Whatever. on his system.
Sure.
And yeah, I think that was like my earliest musical experience was swing music and particularly In the Mood by Glenn Miller.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you recognize it when you hear it.
You'll know. I'll know it.
Yeah, in like a second. That was a disaster. Thanks for tuning in. If you want to keep up with what we're doing, like I said, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, if Twitter still exists when this comes out, you can check out our website, thisdisasterpod.com, our patreon.com/thisdisasterpod, where you can become a patron, get bonus content. Maybe we'll kick up some live stream. I don't know. I don't want to make promises. I hope we get to them again. The live streams are fun.
I guess we have to watch Die Hard again.
Yeah, right.
Or Die Hard 2.
Yeah. It is Christmas.
I can't. I have no more fight left.
And therefore I win.
I secede.
But maybe, you know what? Maybe we should do that. Maybe we'll poll the Discord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the live streams have been a little pathetic.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Please join us.
Yeah, join us. Yeah, join us. They're fun.
We talk shit.
You know, sure.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about how diehards are totally Christmas movies. You know, lots of things that I'm right about.
Yeah. We watch The Grinch That Stole Christmas in the middle of June. Why not? It's just no rules. Nothing means anything. Well, just call anything anything.
Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next disaster.
Yes, we will.
Cool.
I just remembered another thing about White Christmas.
Yes.
Is that it's definitely very much a wartime Christmas song.
Right.
Because I think it's sung from the point of view of a man serving overseas.
Right.
He's like, I'm dreaming of White Christmas. I'm dreaming of White Christmas if only in my dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Because he can't make it home.
No, he can't.
He's stuck in a trench.
Yeah.
And if getting shelled.
During the Battle of the Bulge, it might be in Bastogne, which was a nightmare. Remember that episode of Band of Brothers?
I never saw that show.
What the fuck?